Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of The Spread presented by the Red Light Sports Network. Today's show, we are going to be discussing line movements, futures odds, value, wagering theory, wagering strategy, and anything else that may arise. This program and the website, CoverThatSpread.com, is for entertainment purposes only, and any questions regarding the legality of gambling and online wagering should be directed to your local and state legislative offices. However, if you do have the ability and wish to place wagers with a licensed bookmaker, please do so responsibly and be sure to square up with Uncle Sam on April 15th. Sports wagering, just like any risk-based investment, for example, options, derivatives, or even hedge funds, all these can lead to losses and you must assess your own risk tolerance before you start.
I am your host, J.A., the Pandemic Director and co-founder of Cover That Spread. And I'm joined by my co-host, V. Cassato. How's it going?
I'm doing all right. How's everything going over there today?
Well, getting killed in Major League Baseball right now, but, you know, those days happen.
I hear you. After that hot streak of soccer picks, the last 2 weeks have not been kind.
But that's the nature of the game. That's how it comes and goes. So, you know, shins up. Just got to keep plugging away, doing our research, and things will get better because they always do. So we've got a pretty good show today. You're going to have a little bit of soccer talk per usual. I'm going to go over a little baseball talk per usual. And then we're going to clean it all up with some NFC South for our NFL discussion this week. So let's take a look at baseball because we've got a couple trades that are looming out there right now, a couple that have gone through, a couple more that, you know, people are expecting something to happen, like the Cole Hamels deal. So, you know, we've got a few things out there. The biggest issue, I think, and the thing that makes it so hard to really get a good gauge of what's happening is when you look at the AL, the American League right now, you've got all these teams that are really clustered, and there's only a handful of teams that aren't really in it anymore. You can argue that Boston, Oakland, and even Boston and Oakland, like, you know, they're 8.5 games and 7.5 games out of the wild card right now. So I don't even know if you can say that they're out of it. I mean, that is pretty far down, but, you know, it's not horrible. So, you know, in 8.5 games, you're not going to make that up in 2 months, most likely. So let's say that. Let's say the cutoff is 6 games right now. Cleveland, 6 games out. Texas, 4.5 games out. Detroit, 3.5 games out. Chicago White Sox, 3 games out. Toronto, 2.5 out. Tampa Bay, 2.5 out. Baltimore, 1.5 out. Minnesota is, where are they right now? They are the second wild card at this moment. Houston and LA Angels are both tied for their division, so you figure one of them takes the division, the other one will take the wild card. They're 3.5 games ahead of Minnesota. I mean, looking at these guys, do any of these teams do anything for you outside of the Angels and the Houston out in the West?
No, none of those other teams are really doing anything for me. You know, I think they pretty much have their spots sewn up.
So then it's really just going to come down to that second spot. Right now, Minnesota is leading it. We've got Baltimore the game and a half back, Tampa Bay 2.5, Toronto 2.5. Toronto just made the big trade for Tulowitzki, and they also got there was someone else in that trade, I thought. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't think it was as big of a trade. I didn't think it was that big of an upgrade. Obviously, yes, we know Troy Tulowitzki is one of the best shortstops in the league, but it's not like he's replacing just an absolute bum. You know, he's replacing Jose Reyes, which you can say his best years are behind him anyways. So I just don't know if that was a good enough move for Toronto right now to make themselves that much better. I mean, they've got 2.5 games to catch Minnesota, and I'm not feeling that great about Minnesota anyways. But it just seems like that wasn't really enough to get them to leapfrog a couple teams here. Baltimore doesn't really do a whole lot for me. And, you know, they're right there again. They've been there the last couple of years. But I'm not really feeling much out of this Baltimore team. And then you've got the Rays. They're always right in the mix of things, but we're starting to see that the Rays are starting to slump a little bit. They're 4-6 in their last 10 games, and it seems like they've been a little bit of a prolonged streak, even going, you know, back into June. So I'm not sure if the Rays are going to be there, if they're going to fade away. It's very possible that either Baltimore or Toronto adds another piece or two, and you can see them really starting to pull away from the Rays at that point. You've still got the pesky Twins that are kind of hanging out there, but they're 2-8 in their last 10. They're not playing quite as well at home as they were earlier in the season. And then if you go outside that group, you've got the White Sox and the Tigers, 3-3.5 games out. Detroit doesn't look like they're going to go in full sell mode, but, you know, it's possible. It's possible that they change their mind in the next day or two, depending how things continue to go. They have Baltimore coming into town tomorrow. I guess that's going to be their final say. You're going to get one game against Baltimore and make a decision if you need to sell. They're saying they're not going to be sellers, but who knows at this point. Looking over at the National League, you've got Pittsburgh leading the wild card race. They are 4 games ahead of the Giants. The Giants are 2 games ahead of the Cubs. And I've got to say, looking at the National League, there really are no surprises here. You got Washington leading the East, St. Louis leading the Central, the Dodgers leading the West, Pittsburgh and San Francisco, the 1 and the 2 wild card. And then you have the Cubs 2 games behind the Giants, which you could say is a little bit of a surprise when you're looking at the Pacoda projections at the beginning of the season. They projected the Cubs to win 85 games, and they're on pace to win 85 games right now. So I'm not seeing a whole lot of really surprises there in the National League. Do you think especially the way Pittsburgh has been playing, and even San Francisco as of late here, do you think those two teams are a lock for the playoffs at this point, or is somebody going to catch them?
I do think right now they probably are a lock to make it. I mean, I always have hope that the Cubs can do something and make a little run, being a lifelong Cubs fan, but pretty much it looks like those teams have it sewn up. Pittsburgh's been playing outstanding, as has San Francisco, and San Francisco's been there, you know, obviously last year and in seasons past, so they have the experience to really get it done this time of year.
Yeah, I'm liking Pittsburgh and San Fran in the makeup right now of things, but it's going to be a fun couple of about 8 weeks now until the playoffs to watch how these teams shake out, because you have Pittsburgh right now that's 5 games behind St. Louis, and you have San Francisco that is 1 game Actually, they're only a half game behind the Dodgers for the division. The Mets are a game back of Washington, so I guess technically they could leapfrog everybody. But right now, Washington is sitting at 52-46, leading the East. San Francisco's at 55-45. So Washington is behind the pace of the second wild card as a division leader. They're 3-7 in their last 10. You know, Washington had a rough streak early on. They made a nice comeback as the Mets started to slow down. We may be seeing a little bit of a reversal now where the Nationals are kind of coming back down to earth, and the Mets are starting to maybe pick up a little steam here. And if the Mets could add a bat before the deadline, you know, I think the Mets actually could be a little bit – they could definitely pose a challenge to Washington and possibly even for that wild card spot. But, you know, the Mets, you know, their rotation is set up. If they can get into a playoff series, they could be really dangerous with those guys there. And you figure one of them moves into the bullpen, and that could be a real team to beat in the postseason, because we all know that that type of pitching can take you far. So, you know, it's going to be a fun one to watch down the stretch in the National League. The team with the best record in their last 10 games is Philadelphia, and it's only fitting that they only have 38 wins on the season. They won 5 in a row. I don't really know outside of those teams, Washington, St. Louis, the Dodgers, Pittsburgh, and San Francisco. I don't really like any of these other teams to be betting on a consistent basis. You know, I've been playing a lot with San Fran, with St. Louis. The Dodgers tend to have too big a line, so I try to avoid them. Pittsburgh's a good one that I've been playing as well. But, you know, I'm also trying to mix it up as much as I can, because I don't want to be, you know, if you played the Pirates their last 10 games, you would have gone 6-4, which is great. But you're giving up so much juice, you're probably, if you're lucky, you're breaking even. Most likely, though, you're down a little bit because they're just not winning at a high enough pace. So, you know, it's definitely a little tough at this point in the season trying to figure out who's going to emerge or what team is going to emerge on a week-to-week basis. But we will keep monitoring that, and we'll try to let you guys know when we can. Our plays for today, though, we are down a couple units already, but we still have a parlay. We actually have a round robin going. We've taken the Cardinals, the Dodgers, and who was the last team that we took in this one? I believe it was Baltimore, actually. Yeah, it was Baltimore. So we do a three-team round robin with those guys, do the parlays. It'll be three parlays total. It's going to pay out roughly I did 2 units on each of them, so it's going to pay out about 7.5-8 units, somewhere in that range, if all three of these hit tonight. Just took them on the money line, so get those in while you can. Baltimore is scheduled to be for their first pitch at 7:10. So that's our baseball stuff. You know, it's a daily grind. There's a lot of work that goes into it. Very similar to everything that you look at in soccer. So why don't you walk us through some of your plays last week and where we're going, what we're looking at this week.
So last week we were looking a lot at the Gold Cup, as well as some of the friendlies going on in the International Cup of Champions. Really, it's kind of hard to pick those games that are going on for those preseason tournaments for those teams, you know, that are coming from overseas. So we struggled a little bit with those. You know, the star players aren't always there. A lot of times they have younger guys that are coming up that you really don't know too much about or how they're going to perform, or really even when they play against these MLS teams, if these MLS teams that they're playing friendlies against are really going to step up and play. And then we had a lot of underperforming teams in the Gold Cup with the U.S. just being absolutely horrible, losing to both Jamaica and to Panama in the third place game. And then Mexico really underperforming, getting lucky with a few games there at the end against Costa Rica and then against Panama again, where if anybody was watching, you saw a lot of fights going on between players on the field and even the referees being escorted off of the field for their own safety by the security. So soccer gets pretty violent at times, and we were able to witness it firsthand on American soil with these teams coming from Central America. So we really, had a bit of a dip last week based off of those tournaments. Still trying to kind of get the grip on MLS because they have a lot of transfers coming in right now, as well as a lot of guys that were playing in that Gold Cup tournament. But really what we're finding the most success with is still down in the Brazilian league. So anytime you see those tweets coming out with those Corinthians or any of those other teams coming out from down there, those ones are definite ones to take a look at. And you'll notice that usually those are the ones that have the highest competence of units placed on those games. So we'll be taking a closer look as, more transfers are going on during the summer. Sometimes guys are going to be shipped over to Europe or vice versa. So especially in the MLS, New York has some guys coming in. Then down in Brazil as well, Ronaldinho's going back home from Mexico. So you'll see some teams starting to pick up steam with these signings.
Do you feel like, with everything that happened with FIFA over the last couple of months here, and everything that kind of has happened with the game of soccer, do you feel like that, I don't want to say takes away from a tournament like this, but do you think that maybe they're just, this tournament was really hard for these players to really take seriously? And I understand that the Gold Cup wasn't part of the FIFA oversight, but, you talk about it, how the friendlies where they're the tournaments where they're playing two games against each other, and it's like a cumulative score where you'll see a team rack up like five goals in one game. It's just really hard to predict. Do you think any of that kind of carries over into a tournament like this?
I think it's so difficult to
cap and to bet on.
Yeah, I know, especially we had talked about it in the group stage. You'll find that teams, obviously, they may win the first one and then they kind of slack off against the other teams, especially with the U.S. and Mexico having been powerhouses in the CONCACAF region here. You don't see them always take every game seriously, I guess you could say, and the U.S. for such a long time had been kind of a counterattacking team where they just kind of, let the other team dictate the pace and then come back and score a goal when they're least expecting it. But now that they've kind of changed the style under Jurgen Klinsmann being the coach, they started to come out and be a little more aggressive. So teams are kind of finding them off guard where they're coming out even more aggressive than the U.S. is, and the U.S. isn't in that defensive mindset that they used to be. So we saw with Jamaica, that first goal they scored was really a shocker. Then the second one was just a mistake that the goalie for the U.S. had made, and they really capitalized against them. Mexico, on the other hand, being the other powerhouse, they were having a lot of turmoil with the coach and the media, which on Monday he was fired because of an altercation that he did have with the media. So there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes. And as we found out with the whole FIFA scandal, there's a lot of dirty business that goes on that we're not always privy to, but you can see that it does play out on the field with, how the players react or even with how the referees are selected. So there's a lot of things that go into that.
Well, that, you know, and that's something I think we talked about early on, how I believe it was talking about the Women's World Cup, how difficult it is to get information and how to get legit information from different websites around the world. You know, you've got so many countries that are trying to talk up their own teams, so many programs trying to talk up their own teams. And, you know, that definitely makes it difficult. And I could see that being in all levels of soccer, definitely women's a lot more just because there's not the same type of coverage. But, you know, you don't know how a team is going to react to a new coach in that situation. And you just don't know how anything is going to play out in a tournament when you're plucking guys from different teams that just don't play together as much as other ones do. So, you know, it's definitely something challenging. It's something that's very, very difficult to keep up with on a weekly basis, daily basis. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. So what are the last tournaments that are out there from now until the end of the year? Or are we mostly just waiting for – or are we just going to be watching MLS and waiting for the European leagues to start up again in the fall?
So we still have this International Cup of Champions that's going on. I mean, it's not really a big deal as far as – I mean, the teams that are in it are obviously large teams, you know, that a lot of people know, such as Manchester United, Chelsea, those teams. But the guys that they have playing are not, you know, really their star caliber players that you're going to see week in and week out once the season starts. So that tournament's finishing up, and then over in Europe, we are having some qualifiers for the UEFA Champions League and Europa League. So some of the teams that are finishing in third, fourth, fifth place in their respective leagues are playing for a spot to join those different European championship tournaments that are going on. So you'll see some of those going on, and those ones are, like you had said before, where they have you know, home and away series to decide those, and they go by the goal aggregate. So those ones are interesting to pay attention to, especially on those return legs. Those ones can a lot of times be really interesting. You might see a team that has a 2-0 lead, and they come in and they lose the next game 3-1. So those ones are going to be interesting. And then as well as we'll have the UEFA Super Cup, which takes the team that won the Champions League and pits them against the team that won the Europa League. So that'll be going on, as well as some of the cups that go on within their countries over in Europe, where they have the league winner play against the domestic cup championship winner. So those ones will be going on. They're not really big tournaments, but there's some to take a look at as we get ready for those leagues to take off in the next few weeks.
Good. Very good. Well, we will be keeping an eye on those. So on to the NFL. We are in part 6 of our 8-part divisional previews. So we're going through each of the NFL divisions and going over all the different futures that are out there right now. This week we are talking about the NFC South. This division was an interesting one last year. The Carolina Panthers repeated as division champs for the first time in the 13-year history of the NFC South. There was a repeat champion. So it's, you know, very, very odd division. A lot of people think it's one of the weaker ones. You can make the argument that this and the AFC South are two of the weakest, if not the two weakest divisions in the league. Obviously, the AFC has the Colts. The NFC has you could really say the NFC South may have the best collection of 4 quarterbacks, assuming that Jameis Winston can play up to a high first-round potential, and maybe he even exceeds that and plays like a number 1 overall. we won't know until this season starts if there's any kind of chance. But, you know, this division seems like it's been in transition the last two seasons now. Carolina came in and they won the division 2 years ago. Last year they win it with only 7 wins. They were the second in the modern 32-team system. They were the second team to win their division with a record that was under 500. They won a home playoff game against the Arizona Cardinals, who you could argue the Cardinals were one of the, I don't want to say one of the worst, but with all the injuries that the Cardinals had at that point in the season, they were down to like their 18th quarterback. You could really argue that the Cardinals were one of the worst teams playing in the playoffs just because of the situation that they were in. I do think they were a decent team, but at that point in the season, you know, it really didn't matter anymore. So let's look at the Cardinals. Over-under win total for them is at 8.5. Currently, the favorite for that on betdsi.eu is the under. Now, the thing I find interesting about 8.5 wins is, you know, it's right there at 500, so you're either going 500 or one or two games above. The three leaders here, Atlanta, Carolina, and New Orleans, all have their win totals set at 8.5 by BetDSI. Atlanta has the favorite is to go over 8.5. New Orleans, the favorite is to go over 8.5. Carolina, the favorite is to go under 8.5. Let me see who has the best. So Atlanta is -115 to go over. Carolina is -125 to go under. And New Orleans is at -117 to go over. So judging by that, New Orleans is a slight favorite to win more games than the Falcons at 117 versus 115. However, when you look at the chances to win the division, Atlanta is at +172, Carolina is at +175, and New Orleans is at +225. So I am looking at these numbers, and they just – it seems like – they don't make a whole lot of sense. Because if New Orleans, more people are thinking they're going to win more than nine, or they're going to win nine games, which has driven the odds to be a little slightly more favored than Atlanta. Why are they so much farther behind in winning the division than the Falcons? Can you answer that question?
Yeah, it doesn't really add up to me. It's kind of interesting that it's playing out that way right now, but I really don't know why the numbers would be set up that way.
If you're looking at it from a defensive standpoint, you know, I don't feel good about either Atlanta or New Orleans defense. New Orleans has now recently cut Junior Gallette, who you can argue was their best defensive player last year. And I get there's issues there. There's a lot of things that he had going on that they needed to cut ties with. But, you know, I don't see New Orleans looking in a good direction. Now, Atlanta, they did bring in Dan Quinn as their new head coach. Again, you're looking at a guy who worked as the defensive coordinator in Seattle for 1 year before going and getting this job. So, you know, he has a lot better tools in place than what Gus Bradley had going to Jacksonville the year before. But, you know, you're still talking about a rookie head coach. You're still talking about him going up against one of the best offensive tacticians in Sean Payton. And then you're also asking him to stop Cam Newton, which they've had trouble with over the last couple of years because their defense just isn't that good. So who is your favorite to win? And real quick, let me just add, Tampa Bay over-under win total is at 6. chances to odds to win the division are at +875. So, do you believe in Jameis Winston is the real question with that one?
Yeah, I think Jameis will. I'm not really sure how he'll transition over to the pro game. Obviously the league isn't necessarily kind to quarterbacks that like to get out and run. He has shown that he does have a bit of an arm, but we'll see. I mean, Lovie, as we know, isn't really big on throwing the ball down the field from his time with the Bears. He relied heavily on the run and milking the clock and the defense from, keeping the other team to score. And he did have some moderate success with that, but those teams that are in the NFC South, like New Orleans, Atlanta, and Carolina, are teams that really can put the points up on the board when they have the options available to them to do so. So I don't think Tampa Bay has a chance of winning the division. I think that would be a real shocker. That would be similar to how we had discussed it last week with, I believe it was Jacksonville winning the division. The AFC South, it would be similar for Tampa Bay to win the NFC South. I think Atlanta is still having some struggles, especially on the offense. So I think it really comes down to Carolina and New Orleans. And for me, it's kind of a toss-up between the two of them on who I would pick to win the division this year.
I think I'm leaning on Carolina, because there's going to be a point where New Orleans is going to have to stop somebody defensively, and I just don't think they can do it. They've turned over too many wide receivers. They have turned over too many running backs. I just kind of feel like New Orleans thought that they were good enough to get rid of Jimmy Graham, and they're not. Outside of Jimmy Graham, they really did not have the wide receiving options that you need. And I understand they got by with not having a lot over the years. But Marcus Colston put up some really solid numbers in his day when he was a pretty decent receiving option. Jimmy Graham is what made this offense really dynamic in the post-Reggie Bush era. And I don't see them having it. So I'm going to go Carolina. I think that's the way to go. 8.5 wins, I don't know if they get there. And the reason why I don't know if they get there is because I'm looking at Atlanta. I'm going to just go down the order here. When you look at Atlanta's schedule, this is the regular season how it starts. Versus Eagles, at Giants, at Cowboys, versus Texans, versus Redskins, week 5. I don't think they win a game until that Redskins game in week 5. The Giants, I feel like, are much improved. The Cowboys, I think, are going to be good enough. I don't think the Falcons can stop them running the ball. And the Eagles, I think they're going to bounce back. I like what the Eagles are right now. So, the Falcons could be looking at a real uphill climb. And if the first win you have is against the Redskins in week 5, you have to play next to perfect ball in the division, which they have not done over the last couple of years. They do get the Jaguars late in the season. They get the Buccaneers scattered a couple times. They have the 49ers late. But I don't see them getting to 9 wins. So I'm going to go definitely under with Atlanta. Carolina, let's see where they are at. Week 1, they get Jacksonville. Week 2, they get the Texans. Week 4, they're at Tampa Bay. They also get the Titans. They get the Redskins. They also get the Buccaneers again. You've got them against the Falcons. I think they beat the Falcons twice. So, I'm thinking Carolina could be right there at that 8-win total. It may be good enough to win the division. Just not feeling like New Orleans is going to have that easy of a streak getting there. So if I'm going Carolina, I'm taking +175 for them to win the division. What are you set going with Carolina, or do you like New Orleans to upset them.
Yeah, looking at the schedules, like you said, especially with Atlanta, they're going to have an uphill climb. Looking at New Orleans, so they have week one at Arizona. Then they come home to Tampa to play against Tampa, and then at Carolina, week three, at home versus Dallas in week four, at Philadelphia week five. So I don't think they necessarily have a favorable schedule either. And then they have that stretch where they have, besides at Philadelphia, then it goes Atlanta, Indianapolis, New York, Tennessee, Washington. You know, towards the end of the schedule, it gets a little bit better with Jacksonville towards the end there and Atlanta. But in between, they have a lot of games, you know, scattered around in there that are going to be tough for them. So I think my pick is with the Panthers. I think they have an easier schedule to start off the season.
Yeah, and it's amazing, too, how a good start, you can kind of ride that out the rest of the season because the season is so short. So if you get a two, maybe a three-game lead, you know, by the middle of October, that might be good enough to hold on, even if you're not playing your best football in December. So that takes care of the top three. Tampa Bay at six wins. I think it's a solid one to go under. They did get Tennessee week one, but and they get Jacksonville week five, Redskins week six. But, you know, I just don't see them being able to beat anyone in their division. Maybe they do, though. You know, I don't want to say I don't see them doing it. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to do it. You know, maybe they squeeze a game out against New Orleans and Atlanta. One thing you've got to remember with Tampa Bay, they have two giants on the outside. And one thing we know about young quarterbacks like Jameis Winston who don't have top-tier accuracy is that all you have to do is throw the ball kind of up in their direction, and there's a good chance that the guys who are bigger are going to go up and be able to make the play. Now, it does have to be in the vicinity of a catchable pass, so I don't want to discount that. But, you know, if they can get just enough out of their running game, Winston could be a good option. If you're talking about a division where the division winner may only win 8 or 9 games, I don't think you can really count Tampa Bay out of it. So plus 875 may actually be the best play if you're talking about risk versus reward, if you're going to do one or two units on them. Because, you know, if you take Carolina, you're getting plus 175. You know, that's not a great payout to be tying up your money for 6 months. Tampa Bay plus 875. For a division that could be right there, I mean, win-loss totals, they're only 2.5 games behind the three leaders. So the number was set there for a reason. After the Jameis Winston pick, the Buccaneers took Donovan Smith, an offensive tackle from Penn State, and Ali Marpet, an offensive guard from Hobart, which I have never heard of that school until today. Honest to God.
Yeah, that's the first for me as well.
But, you know, they, obviously, if they're going to take a guy like that in the second round, you know, I got to think that they saw something in him enough that they are probably really going after an upgrade of their offensive line. And you got to like Jameis's chances if they are that devoted to the offensive line and the wide receivers on this team, which is more than you can say for any of the Bears-led teams early on in Levy's career there. So I will give him that much. Let's look at the conference numbers real quick. Chances to win the NFC. Atlanta and Carolina are both at 19-1. New Orleans, 24-1. Tampa Bay, 80-1. Chances to win the Super Bowl. Atlanta, 39-1. Carolina, 42-1. New Orleans, 47-1. And Tampa Bay, 165-1. Any of those numbers interest you?
No, but it does tell me there are quite a few Falcons fans who think that their team might have a chance of winning the Super Bowl because we're throwing them in as third place here, and they have better odds than New Orleans and Carolina. So there might be a lot of people down in Vegas that are they're throwing their last few dollars before they head home on Atlanta winning the Super Bowl.
And that's an odd thing, too, because right now I want to say the Cubs are like the number two or number three team if you look at the odds to win the World Series this year. So that just means a lot of people are throwing money on the Cubs just because. And this could be the same type of situation with Atlanta where just they've got a bigger fan base that's throwing down money. That's why I don't think there's a whole lot of value in the Super Bowl odds of trying to evaluate what's going to happen this season. But I do think there's a lot of value to look at it and see where, you know, if there's a team you like that is down a little bit. I mean, New Orleans is at 47-1. I would think that that would be a much better play than Atlanta.
Yeah. Yep, I'm right with you on those. But I still don't think there's any team from the division that I would place my money on to win the NFC or win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I don't think any of these guys are real contenders when it comes to the NFC or the Super Bowl. Yeah, if you want to, you just want to throw some money out there on Tampa Bay, you know, maybe they do catch lightning in a bottle with Jameis. They run through a week defensive Atlanta and New Orleans to win four games within their division, split the rest of them, and, you know, you're sitting at 9-7 at the end of the year, and that might be better than Carolina. You never know. So, and then, you know, maybe they just are getting hot at the end of the season. Obviously, we never know how things are going to play out, but we've seen some crazy endings in the NFL season. So, but I think we're on the same page here. Carolina and New Orleans are the true contenders. We think New Orleans will be under 8.5 wins. We think Atlanta will be under 8.5 wins. Tampa Bay under 6. And I think I'm ready to go Carolina over 8.5 just because I have a feeling they're going to squeak out a couple extra victories. You know, if they go 6-0 in the division, which I don't think is far-fetched, you know, they only need three other wins, and they're over. So I think I'm going to go over with Carolina at 8.5 and take them to win the division at plus 175.
And they were right about there with 7 wins last year, but they had the tie. Let's not forget. So that kind of played a little bit of a part in that too. So I do think that they can eke out over 8 wins this year.
All right. Well, I'm good with that if you are.
Yep.
All right. Well, any last words with this weekend, or are you going to take the weekend off like you were talking about?
I think I'll be taking this weekend off. Maybe possibly tweet something out tomorrow, but Friday I definitely will not be making any picks. Saturday may be a bit of a recovery day, so probably no picks on that day either. Sunday might find another couple games that get tweeted out. But right now I'm not planning on getting anything out over the next few days.
Sounds good. Well, I am posting some more videos. We've gotten 3 out on the website for our first 3 spread ranking teams. Number 32, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Number 31, the Washington Redskins. Number 30, the Tennessee Titans. And we will be uploading number 29, the Oakland Raiders, this evening. So be sure to check those out, and you can kind of get a little bit of insight on us breaking down the games, the seasons, and how we feel all these teams are going to fare. So be sure to check that out on CoverThatSpread.com. So for the Red Light Sports Network and Cover That Spread, I am J.A. He is Catracho. Thank you guys for listening, and good luck this weekend, and may the spread be forever in your favor. Take care.